You're listening to the Heroes Podcast Network.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Red Shirts and Runabouts. I am Derek, one of your regular hosts, and I have my two guest hosts returning with me yet again, Ray.
Hello.
And Zach.
Hey.
And we are back this week to discuss Short Treks Episode 2, Calypso, which premiered in November of 2018 here. Last week we talked about Runaway, which is Short Treks Episode 1. And next week we'll cover Episode 3, The Brightest Star. So if you missed last week's episode, we recorded this one and that one back to back. So no news. We're going to just dive straight into it. So, spoiler alert, black alert, whatever you want to use there. One small correction. Last week I mentioned that Runaway was about 18 minutes. That was this episode. That one, Runaway, was about 15 minutes. I flipped the times when I was looking at the TV.
So, how dare you.
I know. I apologize. I was wrong. All right.
You're bad and you should feel bad.
I do. All right. So, this episode stars two people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Aldous Hodge and Annabelle Wallace as Kraft and Zora, respectively. And what do you guys want to start on this one?
So let's start at the very beginning because I have mixing thoughts on all this and I'm not quite sure I can give an overall yes or no to it. Absolutely despise the trick of the flashing camera, the in and out, is this working, is this not, to disorient the viewer. I dislike it altogether, but I understand why filmmakers do it, to disorient the viewer, to make you feel like the character, just your understanding what they are. I thought this went on a little too long, in my opinion, so to me, it was excessive. And it started the whole short on a down note for me. I was already a little bothered by it going into it, at the very beginning.
It basically does it twice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does it once in the escape pod with the Betty Boop cartoons, which is definitely jarring for Star Trek.
Right.
Yeah. And then it does it again in the med bay. And I think doing just the med bay one may have been okay.
Right.
But I think doing both was kind of overkill.
A little bit much. And I mean, but they were even, and I liked it because I get why they were doing it, like Ray said, but I also really like there are other ways to do that. And I think that one of there were two shots that were really cool. There's that shot where he's being pulled in the ship across, and then you see that it's the Discovery. I mean, you know it's going to be that, but like the way in which that was shot was very kind of backwards and disorienting. Like it looks like it's floating up, and yeah. So I like the way that was shot. And then when you first see him in the med bay, the camera's flipped, and so it looks like he's hanging from the ceiling. And I'm like, see, these are two shots that communicate this sense of disorientation without giving you a seizure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And the Betty Boop cartoon, while there is a line later in the episode, I don't feel like it really changes anything in the plot.
No.
So they could have just done without it and just shown us this person in like a cryo tube in this escape pod and then done the shot that you're talking about.
Yeah.
And then brought us into the ship without it really changing the story at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree. Now, after that, of course, we're in the sick bay. We're in the med bay. I forget how much that med bay just reminds me of the one on Enterprise. Yeah. It looks so much like the Enterprise
med bay. That's good, though. It's supposed to.
Yeah. It's just interesting. I don't think I remembered that from season one. That's all.
That's fair. So. I don't think there was a time in season one where they showed the entire med bay like they did in here. I think it was very focused on Culber and the patient, usually Tyler in this case.
Now, I will say this episode definitely suffers from my expectations going into it because the way this was all framed to me made it seem like, A, that we were going to follow a character connected to the Discovery crew.
That's what I thought, yeah.
And in this, the Discovery is the character, and a thousand years later? Like, are we really that far from the crew?
Well, so then that's the other thing is that it's the thousand year mark. When you're telling me that, if you're picking a time frame and you don't just say the distant future or something like specifically 1,000 years, it certainly made it feel like that was going to matter in some way. We were going to see something from that time period that mattered.
Yeah.
Right? A ship, a technology, something different. And so this totally caught me kind of by surprise that our main character, Kraft, has nothing to do with the Discovery crew at all.
I didn't get that at all.
Yeah.
That the future was going to matter, or the technology around it was. Because if this ship is literally just sitting, it's not in a dock.
Yeah.
You know, it's not at a space station. It's not even in a museum like what we do with old technology or old vehicles. It's floating out in nothingness. So, to me, I had two reactions. One, you know, they said it so far in advance that it's not going to matter. There's no way they're going to come back to this. So it's an isolated story. I'll let them tell the story they want to. Two, we are never going to see this character again. And that really bothered me because I found him interesting. And his homeworld and everything she mentioned.
I just meant from the marketing material I saw, like if you're like reading on Twitter or Facebook or whatever, they certainly made it seem like
it was going to give you some sort of insight.
There was more impact. That it was more significant. And that's the thing is Kraft is great.
Yes.
And Zora is great. And none of it mattered.
Right. Yes. Well, and like this feels like a piece of pulp sci-fi that could take place anywhere in any franchise at any point in the past, present, future with any ship. Like, the base story itself is very, it's cute, it's endearing, it's a cool sci-fi story. I don't see, other than, like, the fact that it happens on the Discovery 1,000 years in the future, how it has anything to do with Trek whatsoever.
That's part of the problem, right? Like, the Runaway episode, you know, we're learning more about a character we've already watched grow.
Right.
That we're going to get to see continue to grow. We're going to now get to see her. She's no longer a cadet. Like, yeah, you get a little tease at the end of season one, but this is really the first time we're seeing her post-cadet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and now we find out she's going on the command track and, you know, she's finally secure in that. Like, we're learning these things about her. Everything else that's happening with Poe is interesting. Right. And actually has an impact on the future of Star Trek because of the invention that she makes. Right.
Uh-huh.
But in this case, so first off, I mean, there's some other issues here. Right. So Zora is the ship's computer. Right. She's Discovery's ship's computer. And at some point, that computer was the one that we know on the show was replaced with something significant enough that could upgrade itself over time and install like these communication ports that you see all over the ship.
And name herself. There's no reason to believe that the computer has any other name besides computer, because no Star Trek has ever had a name for their computers. And all of a sudden she's, what, female Hal?
Now,
yeah. I'm able to display emotion.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of evolution. Now, we are talking 1,000 years.
Yeah.
Right.
But even it's if plausible. You take the software evolution and you buy that, let's say we all buy that the computer we know in Runaway becomes Zora. The physical manifestation of her building these components throughout the ship where she can talk through, first off, A, wouldn't really be necessary if there's nobody on the ship. And B, how did she build them physically?
Right.
Unless
it happens before the end of the show.
And that's the thing, right?
The only way in which this will tie into the future is all we know is that the captain ordered that ship maintain that position.
Kraft isn't her first person.
Mm.
She could have sucked in other... She did say she was next to a few planets. She could have had other visitors along the way to help her further. That's the only way I can conceive some of those issues is, you know, Kraft isn't the first.
So. That's interesting. That's a really good point. That is a really good point. I'm good with that.
But still.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, so.
Was this necessary?
So that's the thing, right? The characters are super interesting. Their interactions are really cool. I really like Kraft. I want to learn more about him. And Zora is, I mean, I'm a sci-fi nerd, techie guy. I love AI concepts. And
you would fall in love with AI or robot.
No, but like, I mean, you know, things like...
No, you would.
you know, Cortana in the Halo franchise is super cool, and the Doctor on Voyager is my favorite character on Voyager. Like, I like the concept of artificial intelligence. So Zora is incredibly intriguing as a character.
The first parallel I drew was the pilot of the Axiom in WALL-E and Sigourney Weaver's computer explaining all how Earth was.
I like it.
So that's what it seemed like at first, and the guy just get more and more into it. And
well, with classic cinema, it felt very WALL-E-esque.
It did.
Yeah, no, I think that's really interesting. And Star Trek hasn't really done that a whole lot, because we have seen into far future Star Trek stuff, but I mean, if we take the Enterprise J out of it just for a minute, for the 5 seconds we see that time period, you know, we do jump ahead to the 28th century a little bit with the, you know, the temporal agents and all that kind of stuff. But that's still like at least 400 years before the events of this. And that assumes that the Discovery has been by itself since about the time of season 2 of Discovery.
Yeah.
Right. We don't even know what crew she's talking about,
right?
Right? Mm-hmm. Was this Saru and Michael Burnham, or was this a completely different crew?
Yeah,
right. You know, it could have been 50 years.
No reason to suspect that. I mean, how many versions of the Enterprise? How many crews of the Enterprise? So, there's no reason to just assume that it's the Discovery crew we know today.
Now, there is one way I do think that this ties into Discovery and maybe helps adjust some of the canon concerns people have had. Okay, some of the concerns people have had, of course, is the Discovery itself and the spore drive and the design of this ship that clearly doesn't really fit in with the rest of the timeline.
Yeah, I see. I think I know where you're going with this. Yeah,
only two were made, mm-hmm. right? The other one was destroyed in season one, and now we have this one. And if this one ends up lost in a nebula for a millennia,
yeah,
that no one ever knows about, and the crew is missing, and we don't know, maybe they're all dead.
Right. And maybe whatever captain was there ordered it to stay because it was a confidential technology. Yeah.
The crew is dead. I mean, it's been 1,000 years since she has been abandoned. So the crew is dead.
I guess I meant more of they died shortly after leaving the ship.
Got it. Instead of just, you know, they found a homeworld and planted roots and have generations of babies after them kind of thing.
Well, because it doesn't, like,
because there's potential for both here.
I'm having a hard time coming up with a reason that a Starfleet crew would abandon a top secret state-of-the-art vessel in a nebula without any damage. Yeah. Like, there was no battle. There's no battle scars. There's no broken systems. There's no debris on the floors. Like, it's pristine, right? So the crew had to leave the ship.
Yeah.
And voluntarily, since the ship was ordered to stay where it was, you know, this isn't like the Voyager episode, what is it, Misplaced or whatever, where the crew is slowly replaced by the aliens.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right? It's not like that. Like, the crew knew they were leaving.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah.
So this could explain why we never see this type of ship or technology again, because it was abandoned on purpose.
That's true.
Yeah.
Right? Now, that's a little bit of a cop-out, because it's not a real explanation, and I have to put the pieces together.
So far, all we've done is just assume.
Yes.
Yes. You know what assuming does.
I think we should get back to what actually happened, the things that we don't have to assume,
sure.
The things that we can get back. So another nitpicky thing for me, and after this part, seriously, everything else was very positive. That gentleman had been floating in space for a month. There's no way he's going to look like he just got out of the gym.
Well, he was in a cryostasis tube.
Your muscles would still kind of atrophy a bit. So, like, he seriously looked like he had just done, 100 crunches. That's not how medical
situation works. And all this Hodge probably did.
Right. Like, he probably did right before he filmed his shirtless scenes, because that's what my fellow cosplayers do. Anytime they're going to pose, they immediately get down and do, 30 push-ups, and then they get up and they do their flexing. Sure. So everything's, fresh and swollen. So,
but this is, you know, this is the future.
Look,
and alien,
you get to nitpick your stuff. Let me nitpick mine. This was a physical thing. That I know the body doesn't work like that. So
well, we don't have cryogenetic stuff in Star
no,
Trek.
No, it's fake. So I get to nitpick. I can nitpick this. I mean, unless you want to go find Walt Disney.
It's just his head that's frozen.
Right? I don't actually believe that, but
no. I just meant that like Star Trek does cryostasis stuff, and that's never been brought up before. So it's at least consistent in the universe.
All right,
that's
fine. All I'm the asshole.
That's not what I'm saying. That's not what I'm saying. We could never mind. Anyway, so yeah, I mean, Kraft is cool. I like the scenes specifically of showing time passing in the mess hall of multiple like versions of him doing different things.
How long do you think passed?
I would say months.
Same.
Definitely months. I wouldn't say like, years.
Okay.
But maybe 6-9 months.
Yeah.
Would it be close to 7 months, do you think?
Why?
Sure. Okay, I'm going with this because of the title of the episode. It's called Calypso. Calypso was a nymph in mythology that kept Odysseus on her island for 7 years.
Yes, okay. Interesting. I didn't catch the reference for that episode. That's cool.
That's exactly what they're doing, and okay. I adore it. The difference is there was another nymph that he spent 10 years on an island with, Callisto, and he stayed there willingly, whereas this one, Calypso, like made him her prisoner. He didn't like Calypso. He wanted to get back to his wife. So that's the difference.
So this is like a merger of the two.
Yeah.
Hmm. So 8.5 months.
A lot of Taco Tuesdays.
Yeah, it definitely felt like months though, right? Because he had to try all of these different foods and watch all of these movies, learn how to do the dance, grow to have feelings for her.
Yes.
And vice versa. So I'm good.
He is a very attractive man. Yeah.
I've only ever known him from Black Mirror.
Yeah.
Mm, okay.
But great actor. It's a shame the story is so isolated and probably won't be connected for quite some time, if ever. Yeah,
that's my big disappointment, because I purposefully try not to find spoilers for stuff that I haven't seen yet. So for season two, I had kind of hoped he was just a new character that we were going to be introduced to as being more of maybe not a tier character like Tilly and Burnham and Saru, but maybe like a B tier character.
Yeah,
you know, I was really hoping for that, because
maybe this is a jumping off point. Because honestly, there's no reason why another one of their shows can't be 1,000 years in the future, and he's our lead.
That's true. That is true. And I mean, we have been wanting a Star Trek in the distant future.
We have all talked about that's what we want a new show to be. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That's going to be tough, though, because he's not even Federation, Starfleet.
And that's fine.
Like,
it would be the very first Star Trek show that wasn't Federation centric.
Yeah.
Fascinating. It's a fascinating idea.
Right? Like, it would be cool.
Maybe this was a backdoor pilot.
I mean, maybe
that's what Short Treks is going to become. Like, let's try out some experimental things. Like, we want to do an episode with this weird character on a dilithium planet, but let's give her a shot. Let's see if the fans like her first. Or, like, let's do something in the distant future and see how people latch onto these characters.
The thing is that the distant future wasn't relevant here. There's nothing, other than the talking computer. The fact that it's 1,000 years in the future is totally irrelevant.
Yeah. Well, that's why I said, like, this particular episode, my only real complaint is that it could have happened anywhere, anytime, any place, in any franchise. The fact that it's Trek didn't really shine through here.
Yeah.
I will say that after seeing two of these, I am thoroughly impressed with them, because I believe they are more thought out, more purposeful, more fulfilling than the Marvel one-shots.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about those.
Yeah. The only one that really did anything to add to the entire, like, canon was create the Peggy Carter show. It was a backdoor pilot. It was. And it served a good purpose. And But they made, like, what, 5 or 6? And that was the only one that mattered.
Yeah.
So if this is one of those that doesn't matter, at least it was a short and very beautiful to look at piece of fiction.
It was, yeah. It was aesthetically pleasing.
It's a good story, right? I mean, you had an actor who basically had to carry the whole thing by himself because Zora's not on set with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? So all of his reactions have to be to a computer.
Yes.
Right? Which in itself is already harder than acting against other people. And I thought both characters were really compelling and interesting. So
it's a certain skill set to do that. I mean, there's an episode in Peter Capaldi's second season as the Doctor where it's literally just him for the entire episode. Mm. And it takes a certain type of skill, a certain type of acting ability to be able to just play off yourself, basically. Right. Absolutely. And Aldous Hodge is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else you guys want to go over then with this episode?
I don't believe so. Small little note, I hate Fred Astaire. He just sucks. He was always kind of a misogynist jerk, especially to Ginger Rogers. So, you know, he can suck it.
But fair enough.
It has nothing to do with this. Just side note, because Funny Face makes an appearance, and mm-hmm. Audrey Hepburn is absolutely wonderful like she usually is. And, you know.
So let's talk a bit about... Sorry.
I was going to say, Funny Face? About Funny Face, yeah. Well, and then the name thing at the end, like, because I was waiting, like, he was going to say something, like, you know, she was going to, like, tell her his real name, and I'm like, okay, here's where we get our tie-in. Like, he's, like, the ancestor of someone.
Oh, that would have been worse.
That would have been terrible. Yeah. I was waiting for that. I'm like, this is going to suck. I'm going to be mad.
But instead, it was a really romantic gesture.
It was a really, like, sweet...
My name's John. John Burnham.
No, it's going to be John Harrison.
Oh, Jr. God. No, that would have been awful.
That would have been worse.
I want to talk about the holographic technology here for a minute.
Yeah.
Because this is the first time that Discovery has really shown it in anything other than a phone call.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And what's really cool about this is the only other time we've really seen holographic holodeck technology during this time period was in the animated series.
Yes.
Which takes place 15 years after this. Mm-hmm. Right? So I thought it was really kind of cool to see what's essentially a movie from our lifetime, so to speak.
Yeah.
From our, you know, our civilization, but in three-dimensional space that you could actually not just walk into, but take over the character of somebody.
Yeah. It was very, very Bradbury. Ray Bradbury has a short story. Well, I mean, Fahrenheit 451 talks about like these rooms that are like these interactive. You get the walls and you interact with characters in a TV show. But even that, it seemed like it's very limited by the walls. But he's got a short story, and I can't remember it now, where you get to interact with people like this, and it's a cool concept. Be a part of the film, that's intriguing,
right?
But it's also, I mean, it makes sense as the next leap in technology. I mean, we've got that same movie, you know, came out whenever it came out and has been thus remastered in like DVD and then Blu-ray. And so like, why not remaster it in a three-dimensional setting? And then, you know, just a short leap from there to implement, like, you know, getting involved in the movie. The other thing I was going to say is it feels like a natural progression, because Facebook lately has been doing these like 3D photos where you can take a photo mm-hmm. and give it this 3D quality. So, I mean, I feel like we're already kind of like toying with that.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was super cool. It was also the first time we saw the holographic technology kind of take like a physical form. Like, it looked like they were touching each other during the dance sequence.
Yeah.
Rather than him passing through her at will. Now he does walk through her at the end.
Which is a very similar thing that we saw in Blade Runner 2049.
Oh, God. Still not over joy.
Good point. The sex scene was really well done.
Mm-hmm. Good point. That's a really... Yeah, I forgot about that.
You know, it's... This is the first time we see it in Trek. It's only like the second or third time our current CGI capabilities, our technology has been able to show it and not look very poor. So,
well, that's why like in TNG, it all looks real, right? Yeah. In DS9 mm-hmm. and Voyager, right? It's just real. We'll just use actors and it looks real unless there's like a piece missing, and then we'll have really, you know, animated little electrical graphics, right? So I thought this was cool. It still looks like a projection, which is really neat.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of reminds me a bit of in Futurama, the holophone.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it kind of reminded me of that.
That was beautiful. I like that.
Yeah. So that was cool. Like, mm-hmm. there's some really cool stuff in this episode, acted by two really good actors, one of which had to stand by himself on all of these sets. So
one of which was just voice
acting. Except for one.
Right. And so it's like, it's kind of a shame that it doesn't appear to connect to anything else, and then it's just kind of like in a vacuum kind of thing. Because
that's the problem. If they weren't so good, we wouldn't be so disappointed.
Maybe.
Right. Yeah.
So with that in mind, how would you guys have graded this one since we graded last week's?
I think it's an uphill work for me. I appreciate the bottle-like episode that it created as it went along and the romance it created, but the beginning was just such a downer for me that I kind of went into it like, oh man, I hate this. So you cut off that first minute and it's much better short for me.
So
B plus.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would also say B plus. Just it was. It's a good story. It's very beautiful. It's just so far detached from Trek, and so like going into a thing expecting Trek and having it just be fantastic sci-fi is fine. It's just it wasn't what I was expecting. Mm-hmm.
That's fair. I was actually going to give it an A minus, right, myself. Yeah. I found the story, like, I'm a very dialogue-heavy type of person. I love dialogue-driven stuff. And so
you have to be if you're a Trekkie.
This is huge for me, right? Like, I really love the story. I love the banter and the dialogue. I thought it was great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it gets a little bit of a bump, I guess, because there really aren't any special effects needed for the most part. Right, the ships looked fine. Like, yeah, right. That's about as far as it needs to go. I like the effect of it replicating the clothing. I thought that looked really neat,
mm-hmm.
And all that. And then you know, it's hard. I can't just give it a strong A because it does feel disconnected.
Yeah,
but everyone did they just did a great job with what they were given,
mm-hmm.
and so that's why it gets into the A range for me.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
All right. So that then is going to be it for us this week. We will be back next week to talk about Short Treks Episode 3, The Brightest Star, which is where we actually are introduced to Saru's homeworld of the Kelpians and his family members and things of that nature. So huge Doug Jones fans here. So we're very excited to see that one.
Yeah. We're going to meet some Kelpians that aren't in Michelle Yao's dinner.
Oh, that's so
too
sad.
Soon.
Too soon.
Too soon. Ray, where can people find you?
At Siren Ray on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
Zach?
At Avengers ES on Twitter and Instagram.
And I am the Star Trek Dude on Twitter. One little shout out, if you like the show, if you enjoy Red Shirts and Runabouts, you enjoy the Heroes Podcast Network, please go to heroespodcast.com, click on the store link, and go to our TeePublic store. We've got new shirt designs for all of our shows, including Red Shirts and Runabouts. So if you'd like to support the network and the show and even get a little swag at the same time, pick yourself up a shirt or a mug or something like that and represent the network and Red Shirts and Runabouts. Thank you for tuning in. We will catch you next week. Red Shirts and Runabouts is part of the Heroes Podcast Network and is executive produced by me, Derek Mayer. Our music is by Flying Killer Robots. Please consider following us on social media at Red Shirts Pod on Twitter or at Heroes Podcasts on Facebook, Instagram, Twitch, or Patreon. You can also go to heroespodcasts.com to find all of the episodes for Red Shirts and Runabouts, as well as the other shows on the Heroes Podcast Network. Please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Blog Talk Radio, Google Play, or anywhere that you want to drop our RSS feed. If you drop us a review on iTunes, we'll be sure to give you a shout-out on a future episode. Thanks for tuning in. Live long and prosper.